Today's program is brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
I'm Erica White, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, broadcasting to you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This is episode number 92. Very exciting. Coming up on the Big 100, joining me in the studio is my producer, Ann Hogan. Hi, Ann.
Woohoo. Hi. How's it going?
Good. I'm like, yeah, it's going to be, we should do something fun for episode 100, but I'm like, that's still 8 shows away. Then that's 8 weeks away. So I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but I'm excited. I feel like that's a real milestone.
Yeah, no, I think it'll be super exciting to do something fun for that.
How was your 4th of July weekend?
It was good.
Everyone knows that you hate this question, yet every week I insist on asking.
No, you. And it was great because, guys, she actually prepped me just before the show. Yeah. She's like, I'm going to ask you how your 4th of July, how the weekend was. And it literally took me a good 3 seconds to jar my memory of what I did. So we actually went to my girlfriend's, a very good family friend's house, and they are real Brooklynites, and we went down to Bensonhurst.
Oh, that's real Brooklyn.
Yeah, so we, a bunch of, Italian family, and it was super fun.
I want to come to one of these gatherings.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely great. I mean, it's the real deal. So, yeah, so we made it down to Bensonhurst.
And you live to tell the tale.
4th of July, and we live to tell the tale. What about you?
I don't do anything on 4th of July. Mm-hmm. I think it comes from having grown up in a vacation destination where
right.
I have been trained to either work in a restaurant or catering or bartending and make as much money off of people who are on vacation,
mm-hmm.
or do all your shopping, get all your booze, get everything you need, and then don't leave the house for 3 days.
Right,
and that's
right.
What we did.
Barricade
it was
yourself
awesome.
In.
We worked in the garden. We swam in the pool. It was wonderful.
So fun.
And most exciting, I got a listener call on our voicemail line, and it was totally apropos of the seafood conversation that we've mm-hmm. been having over the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give out the listener voicemail line, so if you are thinking to yourself, yeah, I am wondering, you and I and Deputy Director Allison was in here before the show started, and you guys were talking about what you were going to ask Jolie Kerr, who
right.
hosts Ask a Clean Person, who, yeah, that poor woman, I tweet her questions constantly. So if you have cleaning questions, ask Jolie. I can take your cooking questions. The phone number is 862-242-8599. And what I've realized is that I'm asking people to share their vulnerabilities, and I want them to feel like this is a safe place. No one's gonna judge you.
No, yeah. I mean, this is a vault over here.
We are a vault, and it will answer the same questions that other people are having. So
yeah.
Let's go ahead and play voicemail from Sam.
Hi, Chef Emily. It's Sam from Brooklyn. So in my neighborhood, there's this really adorable, a family owns a little fish market. And I was really charmed, and I've gone in and started buying some of their fillets. But when I went to the back, I saw they have a huge selection of whole fish, and all of those seemed to be more affordable than the fillets. Mm-hmm. And also, it was kind of nice to see a fish and know that that's exactly what I'm getting, especially because so many of them are mislabeled. So I really wanted to get one, and then I realized I had no idea what to do with a whole fish, how to clean it, or even whether it's really worth the value. So I guess my question is, what should I know about buying whole fish, and what do you recommend that I do with it once I get it? Thanks, Emily.
I love this question so much, and I have
such a great question.
Such a great
Sam,
question.
Good job.
First of all, thank you for going
yeah.
to a local fish market. That's
mm-hmm.
an incredible first step. Second, you are correct in that the whole fish is going to be cheaper by the pound because less work has gone into that fish. So when you are paying a premium price for something that's already been filleted and the skin has been removed, you're paying the time and the energy for it to have a human being do that for you. So if you do that work yourself, then you're not paying, it may be a difference between $8.99 a pound and $11.99 a pound, something
right.
like that. So for a round fish, fish, like a flounder, for instance, is a flat fish. So mm-hmm. fish that lay on the bottom, their eyes generally are on both sides, or both eyes are on one side of their head looking up. You don't see those so much in the whole fish form in, and maybe Sam can call back and correct me if I'm wrong, but you almost always see round fish, the kind when we think about a fish swim straight through mm-hmm. the water. Mm-hmm. If you buy the whole fish, it's not intact in that someone else has gone through the gutting process. Mm-hmm. So the belly gets split, the guts get washed out. It's also usually scaled for you. So even if you're buying a whole fish, you want to make sure the scales are removed because they're not edible. And if you try to take the scales off of a fish yourself, you will be picking them off the roof, the ceiling of your apartment until you move
out.
It's intense. And like, if you've ever seen someone do it, it's like, holy cow. I mean, they fly everywhere mm-hmm. and they're sticky. Mm-hmm. So don't try to do that part yourself. If you're at a fish market, that's already been done for you. And then there are some simple things you can do and then slightly more complicated things you can do. So if you have a whole fish that's been gutted and scaled, fill the cavity with a couple of herb stems, like a sprig of thyme or some parsley or some cilantro, whatever you have laying. It can literally be whatever you have. It's just going to give it some aromatics. A few slices of citrus, like if you've got a lime or a lemon, especially if it's something like, I find that I have leftover lemons that I've zested mm-hmm. just laying around on the counter all the time because I use more lemon zest than I do whole lemons. Slice those up, put them in, kind of like shingle them on the inside of the fish, and then just roast it whole. You can put a little olive oil on the outside if you want, totally optional. You can split, use a sharp paring knife to cut the skin, and then when the flesh cooks, the skin will break. Mm-hmm. If you've already scored it, then it'll look pretty because it won't tear and leave a ragged edge. Again, totally cosmetic and optional. You can throw it on the grill like that. You can throw it in the oven like that. You can pan fry it in some olive oil, grapeseed oil, clarified butter, anything like that. If you pan fry it, you'll have to flip it over, and you just want to be careful that all your stuff in the center doesn't fall out. You can tie it up with some butcher string if you're worried about that. The other thing you can do is learn to fillet it yourself. There are hundreds of YouTube videos about how to fillet a fish. It's really, really fun. I really enjoy doing it. Mm-hmm. There's this cool sound that your knife will make when you hit the bones of the fish that I find so comforting, and it's probably because I watched my dad fillet thousands of fish. You know that sound, right?
Yes.
So you watch a couple of YouTube videos, and then you grab the fish, and you're like, okay, fish, it's you and me, and then you go and do it. And it will feel intimidating. You're like, I don't know if I'm doing this. Am I doing it right?
Right.
Don't worry about it. There's no one else in your kitchen. Buy three fish, and then serve the most beautiful fillets. You know, the other ones you can cut up and put them in fish chowder. You know, like, you don't, when you're learning how to do something, accept that there's going to be some flaws in the process, and that's totally fine, and that's totally part of it. The other thing is, if you fillet the fish yourself, you end up with the rack, the bones, the skeleton, the head, the collar, if it's a slightly larger fish, which is the kind of cartilage between where the head begins and the body begins.
Right.
That will make delicious fish stock.
Mm-hmm.
Put it in a pot, cover it with water, maybe some parsley, some citrus if you have it, but totally optional, and then just bring it up to a simmer for 20 minutes and strain it. Then you've got a base for chowder, for risotto, for whatever, you know, anything that you would use fish stock for. Now you've got it and it's free. And when you buy a fish filleted, you're really paying for the price for the whole fish anyway, so you might as well take the bones home with you.
Right. Sam, such a good question.
Great question, yeah, right? Excellent. I love listener questions.
Thank you.
If you have a listener question, I'll give you the number again. It's 862-242-8599. No one will pick up. You can leave it anonymously and we'll answer you on the air. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by our two guests from Garden & Gun magazine, which, Anne, are you familiar with Garden & Gun?
I feel like this is like one of my first forays, so I'm like super excited.
I'm such a huge fan of this magazine. I got it the first time in an airport, and mm-hmm. I was so drawn to the title, and I picked it up. I was like, what is this?
Yeah, I'm fascinated. I can't wait to talk to them.
So I'm going to let Jessica Mishner, who is the senior editor of Garden & Gun, tell us all about it. And Chris Williams is going to join us as well. He is the owner of the Williams Knife Company, and he won the 2011 Made in the South Awards, which they're going to tell us all about. Call for entries is open right now. If you're listening in the South and you are a maker of things, you could be featured. And they're going to tell us how it's changed Chris's life after the break.
And this one's called Tanning Bed by RecTech. We'll be right back. program was brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
Welcome back to Sharp and Hot, everyone. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, broadcasting to you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Joining me in the studio is producer Anne. Hi, Anne.
Hi.
So now we have our guest, who I'm very excited to talk to. My husband was like, "You have Gardening Gun on your show tomorrow? I have to find this out on Twitter." yes, we do. Welcome, Jessica Mishner, Senior Editor of Gardening Gun Magazine. Hello.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited that you're here. Can you tell that I'm a really big fan?
I love that you're a really big fan. I always love hearing about people who have sort of discovered the magazine in an airport or Barnes & Noble or a grocery store and picked it up and have fallen in love. It's great.
And I'll tell you that we, as I am a born and bred Northerner, we don't have anything like Gardening Gun that, I mean, I guess Yankee Magazine maybe, but that was like my mom's magazine. And I feel like Gardening Gun is young and hip and interesting. And I just love it. And it makes me sad that I live north of the Mason-Dixon line sometimes.
Well, I think there's plenty in it for everyone. I mean, I think that's part of the appeal. It's a magazine about sort of living a more engaged life, you know, with the land, with food, with culture, music, traditions, and just really appreciating the richness of the world around us, which I think translates well beyond the geography of the South's borders.
Totally true. Now, also joining us on the line is Chris Williams, who is one of the people that you have featured in your magazine and has won a Made in the South award in 2011. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you guys for having me. I just have to reiterate what you guys say. I'm a huge Gardening Gun fan myself.
I've been talking a lot about seafood in the past weeks. We just had Sustainable Seafood Week in New York City. And Chris, you got your start making oyster knives, if I'm correct, right?
That is correct. And I was going to let you know, you tell Sam, your caller with the question, that if he wants some walkthrough on flaying fish, we'll be happy to help him anytime.
Awesome. I will absolutely make sure he gets that message.
So cool.
So tell me about the Made in the South Awards and exactly who are you looking for, what are you featuring, and who can enter?
So our editors and judges are really looking for, I mean, we're looking for well-made products, but more than that, we're looking for products from passionate entrepreneurs who are engaged in sort of every process of what they're creating, from the workmanship right on through to the packaging and the branding, and who also have a story to tell. I mean, part of what makes, I think, our magazine so appealing, again, is the storytelling. And when someone has, you know, a deep personal connection to what they're making, it really adds to the enjoyment of the end consumer, and certainly makes it a fun thing for us to shine a spotlight on.
And you have several categories, right?
Yeah, we have six categories. We have home, style, food, drink, outdoors, and crafts.
And what I love about the requirements is that everything has to be made in the South. It can't be, you know, there can't be any overseas assembly and then have it mailed back. It's got to be employing people within the boundaries of their home state. I really like that.
Right. I mean, we're made in the South, and so I think we feel a responsibility and just a general excitement to identify and celebrate the craftsmanship that still exists here. There's such a long tradition of it, and we're just so proud that it still exists and that all of these great makers who are keeping it alive want to share their stories with us.
So, Chris, you did not start out as a knife maker. You are a career changer, correct?
That is correct. I get told all the time that I have probably one of the craziest winding career paths of anybody out there. I actually started my professional career in the financial industry and was in the investment world and, always made knives as kind of my release from corporate America. And, looked up one day and said, "Hey, I'm going to chase this full-time and see what happens." And best decision I ever made, scariest decision I ever made, but the best decision that I ever made in my life, for sure.
Was there an exact moment that you can remember the decision I have a similar story that the listeners have heard me tell a million times, but there was a moment where I was like, I can't do this anymore. I have to do something else. Do you have an exact moment that you can pinpoint when you made that decision?
You know, there wasn't an exact moment, but there was certainly a small window there where I was, people were beginning to be interested in my products, and more importantly, B, you know, I saw my family growing up from afar, and I decided that, you know, the heck with this. I am not going to miss another T-ball game. I'm not going to be gone for another dance recital. I'm going to do what I love and do it with my family present and around me. And, you know, that was kind of the catalyst to make me chase this full time.
So you started your knife company, the Williams Knife Company, and tell me about that process. Was it like on day one where you're like, okay, here we go?
Yeah. I mean, really, it literally was day one. Obviously, like I said, I had been playing around with this craft. My grandfather taught me the craft, and I had been, you know, making knives for fun per se as my release. But when I jumped off the ledge and decided full time, it literally was that kind of aha moment where I walked in the shop and said, "All right, you know, this has got to be 110% because this is." You know, this is where the rubber meets the road. And I remember those early days. I mean, my first shop was literally like 4 feet by 11 feet, and it could barely fit a workbench in it. And you know, it's just funny to see where that has morphed into today. But, you know, the moment that I decided to do this full time, I just poured my heart and soul into it. And I hope folks can see that in our end product.
So how long was it between when you started the company full-time and when you heard about the Garden and Gun Made in the South Awards?
So I was in my second year of full-time, I like to tell people, professional knife making, when I heard about the Garden and Gun Made in the South Awards. And I was familiar with Garden and Gun magazine. I, like you guys, had seen it on the shelves and was just taken first off by the title of the magazine, and then just completely enamored by the content inside. And I'll be honest, flipping the pages and seeing, you know, the previous year's Made in the South Awards, I was thinking to myself, how can I possibly stack up to these beautiful artisans that are creating just amazing work? And, you know, I sent my submission in almost, I think it was the next to last day before submissions were due, mainly because I was so scared that, you know, A, I was wasting their time, and B, it was kind of a futile attempt to get my product in front of them. And, man, I mean, seriously, from that moment until the time I heard, I really gave myself no shot for even getting, you know, any callback from them. And how my life changed once I did.
What happened?
You know, I tell people all the time that literally winning the Made in the South Awards changed my life more so, or let me take that. Well, it did. It changed my entire life, but it changed my professional life more than any career moment throughout the time I have been working and out of school. I mean, it literally drove traffic to my site the first day to the point that it crashed my servers.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, it's funny. I talk with folks that have won in subsequent years, and I ask them, you know, about their experience with that, and it's that same common thing. I can't believe the amount of attention this thing brought immediately. And, you know, to a small business owner like myself, I mean, that looks like a revenue stream that's sustainable. And so, again, going back to doing this professionally, it literally completely changed my career. And you know, I encourage anybody out there that has a passion and is creating something that's in the South to get their submissions in, because this is, you know, this is the greatest forum for Southern made products, I think, out there.
So Jessica, let's talk about what are you in the process. You pick a winner in each category, right? And then there's kind of a best in show.
Right. Yeah, so each category we typically, basically we get all of the entries. You know, once the deadline hits. We take all the entries, and I will just say Chris is not alone in waiting till the bitter end to submit the entry. We get, it's unbelievable how many entries we get in those last 48 hours. And he's also incredibly modest. I mean, he was, you know, he crafts some of the best oyster knives around, some of the best knives in general. And he was a serious contender from the start. But I think what really set him and his product apart is that it's, you know, it's original, it's useful, and it has a specific reason to be. It was made specifically for, you know, these oysters that are common to the waters where he lived. And I think that's a lot of what we're looking for, too, is products with a sense of place that sort of speak to where they're from. And so in every category, we look at all the submissions that we get. We break it down. We select semifinalists based on sort of the photos and the written application. And then after that process, we'll sort of cull through those and we'll select finalists after we do tastings of the food and drink categories and after the judges receive and review and sort of go through their rubric for the other four categories. And then we typically have, I think, three runners-up and an overall winner in each category and then an overall winner in general.
And what are the prizes other than overnight success and fame and fortune? what are the other prizes that folks can look forward to?
Well, the overall winner wins $10,000, which is huge because, you know, for someone who is just trying to get their business off the ground or take it to the next level, that's money for packaging, that's money for branding, that's money for a revamped website, e-commerce capabilities that they might not have had before. And it's also maybe money to devote more time to what they love doing, if they're doing something else full time, or if they're, even if they've already taken that leap of faith and they're doing it full time already, maybe it's bringing in extra help. So, I mean, I think that in itself is it really is invaluable beyond the monetary, you know, yield of it. And then, like Chris said, I mean, for whatever reason, people do seem to look to these awards to identify great products. I mean, we've seen the Wall Street Journal, we've seen Vanity Fair, we've seen, you know, a host of food magazines all pick up the people that have won these awards and go on to feature it in their publications, which just, you know, increases the exposure, and we're happy for it because we're proud of these people. We know they're proud of what they're doing, and in sharing their stories, you know, they take their product and they put it onto the national scene.
So how do people find out more? What's the website they should go to?
TheMadeInTheSouthAwards.com.
It's so easy to remember. And you have a great hashtag.
And at gardenandgun.com, you can get a link there easily, too.
And you have awesome judges. You have really cool... I wish what I would give to be in the room during the food and drink tasting portion of this. I wish I could fly down there for that.
It's a scene in gluttony. We're all, I think it's the part of this whole process that we most look forward to.
Right. I judged a chili competition last year up here, and it was like the one of the most gluttonous things I've ever done, and it was so much fun.
Yeah, we have to do them in two separate days, and now we have to break the drinks tasting up too because the category's gotten so big, and you know, even if you sip and spit, you're still your judgment might be impaired after the first hour. So we have a good time with it.
Everyone's a winner, you guys. These are so good. And Chris, how do people find out more about your knives?
Sure. So people can find us at williamsknife.com. And, you know, I just want to speak to something that Jessica mentioned. I see this as a common theme in the finalists and then the overall winners every year. It's really people that are focused in on something that is solving a problem or has a very unique usefulness. And anytime you devote your attention to something like that, the art part of it is going to shine through. And I think if you look from the food to the home to the outdoor, any of the products that you see in the pages of this thing all just carry art, but they're all very functional and very useful. And I think that the readers of the magazine themselves appreciate Garden and Gun kind of helping to procure these things. And, you know, I think my wife would tell you, this kind of solves some easy Christmas list items every year for us.
That's so true.
Yeah, but, you know, again, it's just it's really a very cool competition. I love the fact that it's shining the light on folks that are out there, you know, drifting from the mainstream a little bit and doing stuff that they love. And, you know, again, I tell those guys all the time, my hat's off to Garden and Gun for even coming up with this thing. And, you know, I just encourage anybody out there that's doing anything great to send it in. Get it in before the deadline.
That's awesome. And the Garden and Gun food issue is also coming out in a few weeks. Can you tease anything that's in those pages, Jessica?
Oh, I don't know how much I'm allowed to tease, but I can tell you that it's beautiful, and we struggled long and hard with all the different great food stories that we wanted to put in there, but we've got some beautiful, a beautiful feature devoted to the love of the tomato, which all Southerners can definitely appreciate, and, you know, all of our issues are filled pretty heavily with great food stories, but this one in particular, from the cover, from the front to back cover, and sort of everything in between, it's a very edible issue.
I love that. Thank you so much for doing what you do. You truly have nailed the art of storytelling, too. So it's not just that you curate these incredible people and objects and products, but you tell their story in a way. Like, there are stories that I remember from the very first issue of Garden and Gun that I picked up that I really carried with me. And so thank you for keeping it going.
You.
And I know that the, you know, circulation of magazines is something that's not everyone succeeding at right now, and you guys are doing it, and I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right. So I'm going to let you guys go here. Everyone should go to the madeinthesouthawards.com. If you live in the South and you have an artisan product that solves a problem, you should totally sign up.
Yeah. Throw your hat in.
So, Anne, speaking of, thank you to our guests, let me say.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's great. Thank
and
you.
You guys enjoy the rest of your week. And, Anne, I will tell you the other thing that I did this week. Speaking of... it's not really solving a problem, but I got to send another book to one of our listeners.
Yeah.
And I was so excited. Listener Jackie used the hashtag Sharp and Hot on Instagram.
So cool. Thank you, Jackie.
It was so cool. And I'm like, you know, you and I, we do this and we talk to incredible people, like those folks that we just got off the phone and, you know, makers and people who have pursued their passions and their dreams. But sometimes it's like, you know, it's just you and me in a studio and sort of easy
right,
to be like,
right.
All
what
right.
void are we speaking
right.
to? But we're not.
But we're not. So on Instagram, I occasionally remember to say, use the hashtag Sharp and Hot and I'll send you a book. And Jackie wrote us the sweetest email. Can I read you? Can I read you part of it?
Yes, please.
She wrote, I've been listening since the winter. Thank you for fueling my love of food and for making my days at my work desk way more interesting.
So awesome.
That is awesome. So I want all of the listeners out there to know how much we appreciate knowing that you are out there. I don't want to give away the surprise. So Jackie's going to get this package in the mail. Jackie, if you're listening and you haven't gotten your book yet, just turn down your mic. Just turn down your headphones
yeah,
for a minute.
Yeah, put your fingers in your ears.
Just for one
no
second.
Cheating. Okay. Jackie.
She's hung. Okay.
Okay, she's not answering.
She's not listening. So I sent her my copy of The Vacationers, which is Emma Staub's book. I interviewed her this time last year, and it's a really fun summer read, and there's some like, great
Very
food stories
cool.
in there.
Yeah.
But I literally have this stack of books that I'm excited to share and give away to people who are listening. So that is an opportunity to engage with us.
Please do.
Which is exciting. Next week on our show, my very good friend Casey Barber is going to be on. She has a new book out called Pierogi Love. She's an incredible food writer and recipe writer and storyteller. She's been on the show before, way, way back when, with Sean DeTore, who's also a friend of mine. This is back in the olden days. Back in episode like 4. but she's going to come on, and she's going to be in the studio with us. She has threatened to make a Sharp and Hot pierogi.
Stop. Oh my God. I love pierogi.
So she
I'm
was
so
like,
excited.
I'm really excited to see what she comes up with. She was like, Scrapple? I was like, yeah, maybe. Because, no, you're shit. No, she,
yeah, whatever you want, Casey. It's
no, she's got ideas and she was very excited to share them. So,
cool.
That will be very exciting. But her book, Pierogi Love, just came out. It's really adorable. It has this like cute Pennsylvania Dutch kind of feel to it. And she's from Pittsburgh. And so, yeah, she's going to be on to talk about that. So if you have pierogi questions.
Oh man, there's so many. I'm excited.
I used to go to my grandmother's house and my grandmother would make pierogies from scratch and then fry them in fatback and salt pork.
Whoa.
And it was like that, like the smell of fried onions and pierogies is a childhood thing.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, I'm an Irish Italian, you know, but my godmother is Polish. She was like one of the in-laws. And every year at Christmas, we would have pierogies, and her daughter would like make like all of these. And it's just like, it's just a tradition.
Yep.
So now I have like this great Polish tradition like in my house too. So I'm excited.
We have this beautiful, colorful cookbook with things that like, she's got one in there called Princess Pierogies, where you shred beets into the pasta out the end of the outside and then purple potato filling. So they're pink and purple.
I want that.
It's like, that's so cute. Okay. So the, is there any, what else did we want? I feel like there was something else. I was going to take down Weight Watchers today, and then I decided not to because I have a lot of friends and loved ones who.
Yeah, you made your decision.
I've made my decision, but I'm still frustrated by it. Can I just talk about it briefly?
You're doing it. Go for it.
I got into a bit of a flame war on Facebook with.
Never a good idea.
I don't know. There are so many things I delete, but I just couldn't let this one go. And somebody was talking about how. About Weight Watchers, and I said that the problem that I, as I see it, is that a diet soda is 0 points, and a tablespoon of olive oil is 7 points.
Right.
And someone said, well, they're not the answer to everything. And I was like, well, they're taking people's money who are asking for help and making themselves vulnerable and saying, yeah, you know what? I'm going to buy into this structured environment to teach me how to eat better.
And buy their frozen meals, too.
And buy their frozen meals.
Well, I think that's the thing. It's like, that's not their basis. They're not trying to get people to eat whole foods and change their lifestyle in that way. They're trying to get people to lose weight. And in that sense, sure, go ahead. Have your diet soda and not your olive oil. Not my cup of tea, but I'm saying, like, you know what I mean? Like, that's not their whole... Like, they're not in it for the... You know what? I can't... I mean, the food movement or whatever. But I don't know.
I had not thought about it that way. You're absolutely right. If you drink diet soda and don't eat anything else, then you get 0 points. You're right. You will lose weight.
Yeah, but you won't really be happy like down the road. And I just don't.
So anyway,
eat full fat and just eat less of it.
Yeah, whole fat. And so I had to. I needed to send them like really send the message home. So I just Google searched Weight Watchers recipe and a sanction on their website. Two ingredients. Best cake ever. A box of cake mix. And a can of diet soda. And then you bake it.
Wait, what?
I know. That's it. That's it.
That's the thing?
I almost hit the roof. I was like, you have got to be kidding me. This is a sanctioned...
That's the one you sent me?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I did not see that. Like, something else came up.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Insane.
Insane. Insane. So, yeah. Anyway.
No chemicals. Full fat.
Full fat. Enjoy. Did you see the New York Times this week about how gluten is not the enemy? It's not the gluten. Our ship is coming in. Everything we've been saying is being proven to be true by actual science.
Oh, man.
All right, listeners. Thank you so much for another week of your time. I appreciate it. We give you permission to go forth and eat whole foods. Thank you to Anne for producing this episode. Thank you to Jack for engineering, studio intern Maggie, my friend Nice Peter, Pete Shukoff, who's about to go on tour. He made the theme song. Today's break song was for Rec Tech. Until next week, everybody. Oh, yeah, that's the other thing we're going to do. I put my show notes in the wrong order. At the end of the episodes, we're going to play little clips from other people's podcasts on Heritage Radio Network so that you can get introduced to other people.
Very
so
cool.
This week, you are going to hear from my good friend, Katie Kiefer, whose show, What Doesn't Kill You.
One of my favorite shows on the network.
She's so smart. She's so articulate. Mm-hmm. She's so funny. You're going to hear a clip at the end of this episode about 3D printing.
Cool.
Until next week, keep playing with fire and knives.
You know, when we first printed our, you know, first cookie and chocolate and so forth, it was more of a frivolous activity. As I said, you know, we were engaged in printing robots and doing serious engineering, and this was sort of on the side. But very quickly we realized that, first of all, there's a lot of interest in this technology and what it could do, but also that it has a lot, it potentially combines cooking with information technology in a new way.
Professor Hod Lipson explains how 3D printing will change the way you eat on episode 150 of What Doesn't Kill You, hosted by Katie Kiefer.
So one application of that is, of course, printing based on biometrics. So, and we actually open our book with the sort of a scene depicting a future day in your life when you wake up, and based on your biometrics from that night coming from your watch or whatever, your breakfast with eggs and muffin and whatever is printed that has exactly the right level of calcium, sugar, whatever ingredients, nutrients you need, doesn't have the things you don't need, so forth. And it's really the sky's the limit. Once you put this kind of cooking under the control of a computer that is connected to all this biometrics and the latest information, there's just so many things that could be done that it's mind-boggling to me.
So theoretically, Dr. Lipson, we could be engineering our own like diet plan. Say you needed to lose 5 pounds.
Absolutely.
Calibrate that into your machine and then say, okay, feed me that stuff.
Yeah, you can say factor, this is what I want to do. Factor that into my breakfast, and it will be factored in whatever way. Again, that is not just a static program, but it will be based on your biometrics. So it will be customized and individualized. And you could also imagine that these things adapt over time. So people can share these recipes. It's not just a fixed recipe that's in a book and it's one size fits all.
Want to dig deep into the future of 3D printing? Listen to episode 150 of What Doesn't Kill You, hosted by Katie Kiefer, and find archived episodes on heritageradionetwork.org and iTunes. This piece was brought to you by the International Culinary Center, culinarycenter.com.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.